This is KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, and I'm Jim Burke, and this is County Connections, and I'm here with my co-host, Greg Brotherton. Greg, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Jim. I'm excited to have my first seat here on County Connections.
I know, so, really it is exciting. Very exciting. Yeah. Who else do we have with us today?
Well, I'm really excited to bring kind of the illustrious executive directors, both past and present, of OLECAP. Mm-hmm. And OLECAP, as many people know, is our local community action program. It's a two-county organization that deals with many of the human services that the county can't provide itself. You know, they were started as part of the war on poverty by President Lyndon Johnson. And our programs here are fantastic and cover everything from, you know, senior services to insulation and LIHEAP and ERAP and housing. And knowing the big housing crisis that we had, you know, even before COVID,
right.
Our previous executive director, who I'm proud to welcome here, Dale Wilson, really championed this project, Seventh Haven, that we're primarily here to talk about, which is the new affordable housing project that's due to start filling its doors and rooms with our most marginalized population in a week or two. And I'm also joined by Cherish Cronmiller, who stepped in at Dale's retirement and has shepherded this project through to the state we are now, just about ready to have people move in. So I'm really glad to have both Cherish and Dale with us, reflecting the past and present of OLECAP.
Well, thanks everyone for being here today. I'm also excited to know that CAP stands for Community Action Program. I hadn't even occurred to me. I just have been referring to OLECAP for the last several years, just as OLECAP. Then, you know, the people who do all those great things. Cherish, welcome. I just want to welcome you because I want to make sure that you're on a Zoom call. I just want to make sure you have audio.
Yes, thanks so much for having me today.
Fantastic. And Dale, how's your microphone doing?
It seems to be fine.
Thank you. Great. All right. Well, here we are. Who's going to start?
Well, I would love for Dale just to kind of talk about the gleam in his eye that Seventh Haven started as, and, and start us from the beginning. You know, we have a lot of people working on this project at OLECAP, of course.
No
but
kidding.
You know. Yeah. These, the two executive directors, without their support and championing and network building, it wouldn't have happened. So I'd love to hear from Dale about the origins of Seventh Haven.
Dale, tell us how it started.
Yeah, thank you. Hey, I tell you, I am just incredibly excited that this project is finally, you know, you can see it, it's there, and now we're just, you know, so close to people actually being in there.
Yeah.
And I just first want to acknowledge all the work that Cherish has done on making this project come happen, because she could have easily walked in and said, no. And so, yeah, the project actually started back in somewhere in probably around 2018 in earnest, but where its roots lie, we're actually in the defeat of Proposition 1, which promoted the housing organizations here in town, including Habitat and OLECAP and the Peninsula Housing Authority, and a lot of other folks got together and asked folks what they wanted to do about housing, and if they wanted to do a tax so that we could have a basis so that we could go and leverage those funds. And some things happened. It should have been, we thought it should have been a slam dunk with the housing crisis that we were already in at that time. And, and it wasn't. In fact, some things happened during that time, and I won't go into in regard to some not well thought out project, and I think that
I think I know the one you're talking about.
I think everybody knows what I'm talking about out there, but I'll just let it slide by. Right. But at any rate, the proposition failed.
Yeah,
and it was pretty dark mood in the room after that, because it was like, where do we go from here? Because we don't have any local source of leveraging, and communities that are successful in building housing always have a little bit of leverage to go in with,
right,
and to show that they have skin in the game.
Seed money.
Is seed money.
Yeah.
And so we sat around, I think we licked our wounds for a while and commiserated. And I remember it was Kathy and I and Mark Blatter went to a conference in Yakima on homelessness, annual conference. And a lot of people were coming up and, you know, giving us the, oh, we're really sorry that happened. And, you know, we were like, at some point it was like, enough of this.
Yeah.
And we were sitting outside and talking, and I finally, you know, I remember Kathy saying something, and I just went, nope, we're just doing this, and this is going to happen. We've got to do this. The community cannot not have something happen here. We can't step back and just let it slide and pretend that everything's good, because it's not. And so when we came back, I remember Mark came, it was just a few days later, came in, because you know, we'd been looking for sites for a bit, and he came in and he goes, I think I found the site. And I go, okay, let's go down and take a look. And so we all, Kathy and he and I, piled down in the car, and we went down to, you know, QFC parking lot, because he wasn't telling me where it was. And he goes, here it is. And I'm going, where?
Yeah.
And he points to this dusty parking lot with a bunch of cars sitting in it. And,
right.
At any rate, from there, it was like, I don't see 45 or 50 apartments.
Right.
Because it's still small.
Well, it was more parking than they needed there,
it was more
as parking. I recall.
There was a lot of parking there. Yeah. And so,
well, I have to say, it was not a dusty parking lot. It was a brand new parking lot made and under contract to Jefferson.
No. Actually, no, this was actually
before that.
It was actually before they paved. And then we found out they were going to pave in a couple of months. And it was like, okay, so it was an adventure. And it was, I guess, a leap of faith, because I can tell you right now, Ole Cap did not have the financial wherewithal. Mm-hmm. To pull off that kind of project, without a lot of support and prayer, and the staff capacity, we already were stretching people to their max, and we weren't talking about adding on any capacity staff wise, because we couldn't do that. And so it was like, okay, is everybody willing? And I had done this before in other communities and had a pretty good idea of what it was, you know, what it takes. Mm-hmm. And I could see that my staff, Kathy and Mark and Allison and the whole housing gang there, we're pretty enthused and pretty excited and pretty willing to go that way. So we went back to the board, and the board, I remember that meeting where I said, here's what we want to do. And I didn't say, here's what we're going to do, mind you. But
we'd like to do.
Yeah. But after a little, some actual chuckling and some pretty pointed questions, and they came around, and a couple of months after they got the fever about what this was about and could see it. And pretty soon you get it in your mind's eye. And then from there, it was like, okay, we had an extensive process with the community, lots of community input on everything from location to what it looks like, to colors. I mean, community had involvement in all that. And unfortunately, I had some health concerns that came up just about the time we thought initially we were going to get funded. And I left thinking, oh, this is going to happen, and Cherish will come in and it'll be fine. Well, the funding, we missed it by one point. That's a whole point thing with the state and the feds.
Oh, wow.
We missed it by one point, and it was like, oh, man, I felt bad. And Cherish came on, and, you know, 2 months later or a month later, a little thing called COVID happened and basically shut everything down. But, man, I can say she and Kathy didn't, and Mark did not give up the
It could have easily vision. Stopped at that point.
That's right.
This is a, you know, over $15 million project, so there's no way that you can pay for this kind of capacity, you know, locally at all. So when we didn't get the commerce, or it's really challenging for rural communities to get the federal low-income housing tax credits, and we failed to get those both times, actually. Wow. Which both of those funds were really seen as critical to get the necessary funding. So I thought it was a really great project from the get-go, and I had joined the Ole Cap board soon after this gleam in the eye became a real uttered concept.
Was that before you were on county commission as well?
No, I fought to be, as after I was elected in 2018, when we were kind of going through the duties, Ole Cap is a tripartite board, so it has a third elected officials, a third community members, and a third folks with lived experience, usually that have participated in Ole Cap programs. And so we always have a commissioner on there, as well as a city council member and a commissioner from Clallam County, and a city representative there too. So I petitioned and argued, kind of arm wrestled with David Sullivan, who was sitting in that seat originally, and learned so much so quickly. You know, they say that being an elected official, it's kind of like drinking water from a fire hose. Just being on the OLECAP board is like drinking from a fire hose. There are, you know, 17 programs, you know, all over the array of human experience. So the county quickly supported it, and this was county land that, you know, we had the contract for this parking lot with Jefferson Healthcare, which had some real staff parking issues. Mm-hmm. Still does, I think.
Right.
But, you know, it just... It was a crisis then. It's a worse crisis now. So it was easy to get the county supportive of the project, and we could give it the property to OLECAP for, you know, 10 cents on the dollar is what's allowed under state law, and we were happy to do that. And the city bent over backwards and permitting as well. Mm-hmm. So really, all the local agencies were trying to give that support that Prop 1 didn't give, you know? I think that was pretty critical to its early success and to keeping it going with OLECAP when we did face that first hurdle of not getting funded in the first round.
Well, yeah. Cherish, how did, when you came on board as director of OLECAP, what did you find and how did you take what you found and help propel this forward?
Well, you know, I had done my research, you know, prior to accepting the position and had looked at, you know, the fact that affordable housing hadn't been built for, you know, 15 years around that time. And what was done, you know, 15 years ago, 13 years ago was actually our South 7 senior housing project in Port Hadlock, which was only 15 units. And so recognizing the housing crisis, since, you know, I could barely find housing myself, you know, I was going from a 3,000 square foot home in Dayton, Ohio, that cost me $125,000 to buy, to try and find a remodeled garage, you know, to live in at a cost similar to what I was paying for my mortgage, insurance, and taxes in Dayton, Ohio. So, you know, I knew that it was going to be so imperative to trying to bring, you know, more housing to this area that's affordable for the working class individuals, you know, in our community. And that was going to happen, you know, one way or other. When you are working to try and get federal, you know, tax credits, any type of federal dollars, you know, as Commissioner Brotherton stated, can be very difficult to be competitive in a rural region. And often those dollars tend to slide towards what I refer to and what some states refer to as suburban areas. They get sometimes looped in. They get called rural, but technically they're suburban because they're just outside major urban areas.
Right.
And so, so it can be tough. And, you know, for everything, all the difficulties that the pandemic brought, it did indeed bring to the forefront as well the issues around housing, you know, and the unsheltered individuals. And it also brought, you know, dollars towards, you know, some of these issues and towards tackling some of these issues. And so we're grateful that Washington Commerce, when they got money from the feds, they really looked critically at, you know, what projects were shovel ready, right? Mm-hmm. Ready to dig, ready to go. Ours definitely was that. And that they were able to, you know, help us, you know, practically fully fund the project. So, you know, you add that to some of the local support, you know, received through Jefferson County, not only in the land purchase, but also some 1590 and 20—what's called here 1590 and 2060 funds. All of that is crucial, and, you know, and so as I tell folks, they should be really proud to be in this community, to be in this county, and they should acknowledge the great work by Washington Commerce and by Jefferson County commissioners to take the money that came through in the stimulus and make a tangible difference to the number of housing units available in these communities. I think the money has been spent wisely, mm-hmm. and it really is just a feather in their cap towards, you know, what they were able to do with these dollars.
Did Congressman Derek Kilmer have any direct involvement in this in terms of getting funding from the feds, or was that sort of secondary, like through the Commerce Department?
Yeah, that was secondary. I mean, obviously, you know, Representative Kilmer is a huge advocate, always coming you know, and knows our work, supports, you know, community action agencies. But, you know, this ended up being technically all state and local funded. Okay. And so actually it was, I believe it was Representative
Theringer.
And
Steve Theringer.
Commissioner, help me out here.
Steve Theringer. Steve Theringer helped us.
Steve Theringer helped us get some local dollars through that budget to help us with a little bit of a gap that we had going at one point. Uh-huh. And so so that those local dollars, you know, allocations were helpful. And so we're grateful to Representative Theringer as well.
It's fantastic. I have a few numbers here I want to share with our listeners. 6 studio spaces, 18 one-bedroom, 15 two-bedroom, and 4 three-bedroom apartments. There's on-site parking garage located on the ground level. It will also feature a child care facility run by Olympic Peninsula YMCA in the near future. And it will also have support services and special unit designations for Discovery Behavioral Health, Dove House, and Olympic Neighbors. And it's also has many features that make the property a net zero energy building, which is very exciting as well. Timely, I'd say.
Can I add a little bit more nuance to those numbers?
Please, absolutely. Yeah. That's why you're here.
So 5 of those units are reserved for folks with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Mm-hmm. And 5 are for folks with behavioral health issues or substance use disorder. Mm-hmm. 2 for families or people fleeing domestic violence. Mm-hmm. 22 who are exiting homeless directly into this. That's 22 homeless folks are going directly into Seventh Haven.
Wow.
And then there's 10 veterans through VASH as well that are being served by this, and one market rate unit. So that's 32 project-based wow. Section 8 vouchers from one of our other great partners that really enabled this, the Peninsula Housing Authority, mm-hmm. and also 10 of the VASH vouchers for the veterans. So it really is serving our most marginalized population. Yep. And and it looks great. And that's the other thing. That is, I mean,
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, the Cherish was trying to put her name on one of those view units on the second floor. They're pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
That's actually, I want to say, that's pretty impressive that that Greg could fire those off, because that means, that tells you something about how involved he has been in this project.
Yeah.
And the kind of support he has given to it. I know out of all the commissioners, he's been the point person on this. And, you know, it's not always easy. And that was very impressive to have that.
It's great to say that, you know, 32 out of the 43 units right now are going to folks that are unsheltered or currently, you know, in shelter facilities. So they're either in our shelter facilities or they're considered unhoused or underhoused because they're doubling up with someone,
right.
Or, you know, they're using one of the transitional facilities. Mm-hmm. And what that does is it helps move everyone along on the continuum, right? So that opens another space then in the shelter or in transitional housing to allow another person to come in and try and move them towards some type of permanent supportive housing. And permanent supportive housing is desperately needed. You know, having those on-site services and that on-site support is crucial to stopping the cyclic nature of unshelteredness, you know, mm-hmm. that we see happen when folks try and make this happen on their own. And so it is amazing to see those number of units and the child care piece. So just to add to that, there'll be roughly 33 slots for child care. As you mentioned, the YMCA is going to be doing that in our partnership with them because they're in the child care business.
Right.
And we do early learning services, right, with Head Start and early childhood services, but we don't do just child care per se,
right.
Whereas the YMCA does. And so 33 slots, and that'll be geared towards children aged 3 to 5. And it's not just for residents. I mean, those are going to be opened up to the community.
Right.
So Yeah.
So another resource is added to the community, right. not just for right. the people who live there, which is great.
Yeah. Two offices. So one office for a property manager on site and uh-huh. supportive service, another office for our partners to come in, those that specialize in mental health, substance abuse, issues like that, to come in and be able to meet with folks privately outside their units as well.
So when are people going to be able to move in? I heard there's a date coming up, or there was, and now it's just slipping a little bit. So do you know?
Yeah, we're looking at, you know, at this point towards the end of May, there's just a few things that we want to get tightened up and make sure are right. It's also tough with when you do have, you know, voucher programs, they're through HUD. There's a lot of paperwork. There's a there's a lot of bureaucracy with it. We want to make sure that, you know, we're doing our due diligence. And of course, the Housing Authority is working hard to help us with that. So definitely by the end of May is what we're looking at this point. So
I can't imagine. I just signed up for Medicare last month. So, I mean, that was just me and Medicare and supplemental insurance. That was a bit of a mini nightmare, but it's. I'm not here to talk about me, but I can only imagine if you multiply that by dozens of people and programs and so on, how difficult it would be. So
and,
I appreciate
your work. And the
work
doesn't
work
stop. You know?
No, I realize
that. I think, Cherish, I'm hoping can take a moment to talk about new developments that are happening, too, at Coswell Brown Village.
I was about to ask, what's next, Cherish?
Yeah. So what's next is, well, first finishing up the child care, the tenant improvements at child care that had to be built technically separately because it's considered a commercial space. Okay. And the other portion was residential. So folks will continue to see some construction happening there in case they're wondering. So the tenant improvements in the child care and then fixing up the street. Our partners with Seton Construction are going to be helping with that. And then the next big thing is we found out this week we were fully funded, the $5.5 million to build a congregate shelter here in Jefferson County. And that's going to happen off Mill Road. Again, the county was wise in using some dollars to purchase parcels off of Mill Road. And we have used those to not only emergency shelter folks that had been living at the fairgrounds, but then to construct and build an open air shelter. And now phase three is going to be the congregate shelter, which will have a combination of emergency beds and permanent supportive beds for folks that need to be in a congregate setting. So, you know, unlike some of the unsheltered folks going into Seventh Haven who can sort of manage their own bathrooms and kitchens and things like that, permanent supportive housing at a congregate shelter allows somebody to have their own private room, but the other services, are congregate and there's monitoring 24/7 to help with some of those folks that maybe have struggles beyond being able to live on their own. And we know that's been a need in the community, and that's going to get the folks out of the, as much as we appreciate, you know, the abasement of the American Legion and what it's done, you know, for the past almost two decades, it is windowless, right? And it is a basement and there's activity going on right above your head and you're sleeping an arm's length from someone. That's going to change. It's all going to change. And we are grateful again to Washington Commerce that has used its dollars wisely to the Apple Health and Home initiatives to help us with those folks that are Medicaid recipients. Uh-huh. And so we've secured that $5.5 million.
That's fantastic.
Wow. Yeah. Congratulations. Wow.
Yeah. That's great. Well done. Yeah. We're coming up near the end. We have about a minute and a half, and then I'm going to play a little song to see us out. But any last words, Dale?
Yeah, I just want to say that, you know, as exciting as it is to see a physical structure go up and know how hard it was for these folks that have been working on it for the last 3 years or plus, the most exciting part of this is if you know somebody that's going in. And if you know somebody personally that's going in, and if you talk with them, how excited they are at the prospect if they know. And if you know how, you know, and part of that is I know a couple of folks that are going in there, and I know mm-hmm. how their struggles have been, and they're very invisible. Both the folks I know have jobs,
yeah.
and people wouldn't think that they would need housing, but in this community, they do, and it's going to make a mammoth difference in their lives. And you know, they're both veterans, and they deserve what we can help them with, and. That's the most exciting part about this
project. It is exciting. Housing, something that somebody will have when we can only imagine because we've been lucky enough mm-hmm. to have that in our lives. I mean, we've been talking about this for months on other forums as well. And of course, the city has been talking about zoning and all that other stuff. We can't cover the rest of that today, mm-hmm. But there is going to be a little plug here. There's going to be two half hours of housing forum talk that happened at the Community Connections Fair about a week and a half ago. It's going to air Monday and a week from Monday that Chris Bricker managed to record. Anyway, Greg, last words before I play this song.
I did choose this song. I love Rhiannon Giddens, and it was written for Juneteenth, but I still find it beautiful and evocative for this, too. And Dale's absolutely right. These are real people, and getting them in houses really makes it worthwhile and just renews my faith in the concept of housing first. We really need to work on this as a society and really look at our values. Thank you.
Thanks so much for being here on County Connections, everybody.